This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Monday edition of Game Misconduct. I can tell you for certainty that the season will end on Wednesday. We just don't know who's going to be the Stanley Cup champion. The Blues had their opportunity last night. They let it slip through their fingers. And somebody who is live with us here from Boston after getting from St. Louis for Game 6, of course, is our Monday guest, EJ Raddick, NHL Now, Monday through Friday on the NHL Network from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. How are you, buddy? I'm sure you're weathered.
I was weathered before I started this trip. So, I mean, you know, nothing new. But, you know, not to be a nitpicky here, Donnie, but if we get into like a lengthy overtime in Game 7, I mean, the season could end on Thursday.
That is true. That is true. I was thinking, you know what, I was thinking about that as I was saying it, but, you know, I thought the only somebody really corny over semantics would bring it up.
Only annoying character. You should have known that I'm just that guy.
I should have known. That's my bad. It's an awful job by me, but crazy series. It really is. It's kind of reminding me for our old fans out there of like the 60 World Series where it went 7 games where like, remember the Yankees like won every game by like double digits, but then they lost every game by one goal. Like, you know, it's like,
neither you nor I. Such an event.
No, but we read. We're very learned. You know, we are.
We study sports. We were as children. We learned about these things.
Yeah, and
we're kind of crazy sports junkies. Like, you know, I'm sure you were. So
yeah, absolutely. So, you know, like a 5-1 Boston, 7-2 Boston, a lot of one goal. You know, Blues wins with empty netters, and now it just comes down to this game 7. But I can't help but think that because of the Bruins' experience and St. Louis's lack of experience, that this was an opportunity that really slipped through their fingers and they're going to pay for it, right? I mean, it's a game 7. Now we've seen teams win on the road. Boston won on the road in 2011, right? Pittsburgh won on the road in 2009. The last two game 7s have been won by the road team, but boy, I just have this feeling the Blues are going to kick themselves after missing that opportunity, yesterday.
Well, I mean, they may, but, you know, they finish up at home during the postseason with a record of 6-7.
Yeah.
On the road, they've been much better. And, you know, they've got a couple of days. I always feel like the extra day is always better for the team that loses. They have an extra day to regroup and look at some of the things they have to do better. You know, clearly coming back to Boston and having a game 7 and the experience of Rask, and more importantly, maybe, I guess, of Bergeron and Marchand and Chara. You know, that's something that certainly weighs in the favor of the Boston Bruins. But the Blues have come into that building and won twice so far this playoffs. It hasn't been pretty, but they managed to get it done. So, you know, I think the Blues, they haven't gone away at any point this year. It's been an unbelievable story. I expect they will come and put their best game forward. And maybe it'll be their best game in the series. At this point, you only got to win once to win the Stanley Cup. So we'll see what happens. One thing I would suggest is that they got to figure out a way to be better on the power play. You know, the problem isn't, you know, like last night they had more chances, but they don't have any one-time option on the sides. You know, they don't have Tarasenko doesn't have a one-timer. It's kind of like Rick Nash with the Rangers. Remember, Rick Nash didn't have a one-timer, right? Wasn't in his bag of tricks or in his arsenal. So I think you got to figure something out if you're Craig Berube and kind of work on it over the next 2 days, a new wrinkle or something different. I would put Colton Parayko, the big right shot, in that Ovechkin spot in the off-wing circle, and I would try to have him as a one-time option there and then maybe have Tarasenko on that other side, and maybe you can have a little bumper play where he just takes quick shots from there, because the penalty killers at this level are really good, and you've got to make move. You've got to make things happen quick. You've got to get shots. You've got to look for. Then you've got to, you know, retrieval, get rebounds, and make things happen. So the Blues' power play has just been abysmal in this final series, and they've got to figure out a way to be better if they get opportunities in game number 7.
Yeah, and in Boston, on the other hand, they get another power play goal last night. They've had the best power play throughout the playoffs. The really special teams have been a big difference in this one. And, of course, Tuukka Rask has been, you know, terrific as well. When St. Louis got their opportunities, he was right there to make the save, not giving up a goal till, at least in my opinion, the game was pretty much already decided.
Yeah, and it was one that they had to look at it like really close.
Right, you didn't know what happened.
Yeah, he got over there really quickly, and they had to go and stop. You know, at the whistle, they they reviewed it, and it was there was a great shot of it. There's a great circumstance, right, when technology does us really wonders, because that puck was clearly in, and we had a great shot of it, so there was no question about it. But Rask has been sensational. In the three times that the Bruins have faced elimination in this postseason, twice against Toronto and last night in St. Louis, he's got a .953 save percentage. He stopped 82 of 86 shots. So he's been the backbone of the Bruins all spring, and we'll see if he could seal the deal on Wednesday night. I'd feel pretty comfortable with sending him out there the way he's been playing over the last couple of months.
And we haven't talked to you since Game 5, and, of course, the controversy with the no call, which we talked quite a bit on the last podcast, but I just wanted to get your opinion on it. It's hard to defend it. You know, it was missed, clearly. I know some people have kind of come out of the woodwork and said, well, I think it was a good non-call. Ridiculous. I mean, he was tripped. It should have been a penalty. But I wonder if you thought the same thing that I did, that everybody's showing Kelly Sutherland, right? And they're showing his clean line of sight with the animation that, he can see and have the angle. The one thing you never see in all of these non-calls or calls or whatever is actually the angle in which Kelly Sutherland was looking.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
so is it possible that just his angle, it's something that could have been missed? More forgivable, I guess, is the way to put it. I mean, I'm not trying to defend the guy. I'm just saying when somebody as good as he is, and I think he's a good official, he's been around for a while,
yep,
has that clear line of sight. My thinking is, well, we don't have his angle. Is it possible that his angle saw a mesh of bodies and that it was possible that he thought the contact was inadvertent? Am I reaching, or is it something that's a fair comment?
I think it's possible for sure, because we don't know. I mean, you have those cameras they have on the referee's helmets that give us a view of what the referee is seeing, and that gives you a better idea. They don't wear those too often. They only wear them probably really certain nationally televised games during the year. So I think it's possible. These guys, I mean, Donnie, how many, we've talked about this a million times. They have a hard job. I mean, they get one look, and it's going really fast, and there's people in their way, and there's people trying to embellish, and you're trying to figure it all out. You know, for me, I go back to what I always say about this. It's just make your life easier as an official, and I think this is something the league has to do. Just call the penalties. You know, don't try to manage. Don't try to say, well, they got five for them, now we got to give three, four for them. I mean, that's been the history of this league. Just call the penalties. And if one team has seven penalties and the other team has none, that's just the way it is on that particular night. On that game, in Game 5, I mean, that was an obvious miscall to me. There was a very similar play, by the way, that happened in Game 6 when Brad Marchand did almost an identical thing to Alex Pietrangelo, and it was a penalty called. And it was, it was a good call. I thought the referees did a great job in Game 6, for the most part. You're never going to agree with everything, but I thought they did a pretty good job. It was unfortunate the time it happened, and then the goal results, like, right after it. There were some that went as far as say, well, they thought that Achari was embellishing. I was like, I don't know how you can, come to that conclusion or say he didn't get up fast enough. I mean, it's very, very difficult to get into somebody's head, and you get knocked, head over tea kettle, so to speak, and you're woozy. I don't know what you're supposed to do there, but there were three or four calls in that game, Donnie, that I thought were obvious penalties that were not called, and that was the disappointing thing to me beyond the one most important one,
mm-hmm.
because there was another one on Barbashev that ended up being a suspension for Barbashev. So that's a penalty. And there was a hit by Sanford on Krug in that game. I thought it was pretty straightforward. Could have been a penalty. Wasn't called. And there was a play where Sundqvist, late in the second period, kind of put the chicken wing a little bit on Torrey Krug
right.
and allowed for the Blues to get a great scoring chance that was only thwarted by his sliding David Krejci. So those are four calls in that game that I think were pretty obvious calls around the puck, easily seen, or at least generally easily seen, that weren't called. So I just think Game 5 was a poorly officiated game, period. And that's going to happen. People have off nights. And, I thought Game 6 was much better. And hopefully in Game 7 we'll get The guys will do as good a job as they can do, which they're always trying to do, and we won't have any kind of controversial things. The teams will decide it on the ice.
Unfortunately, we live in a world where people want things corrected, all right? And we saw it from the championship game last year in the NFL between the Saints and the Rams. I mean, do you think the NHL has an appetite to correct some of these things? Now, we talked about the hand pass, making possibly that reviewable. Is it possible they can go back every time a goal is scored? All right, let's look back and see, oh, there's a call that wasn't made. You know, having somebody like goaltender interference, giving the officials another opportunity to look back at that. I mean, how much is the NHL open to adding more replay and trying to correct some of these problems? Because these are high-profile problems that a lot more people are exposed to than a given November game, you know, at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
So you talk to people around the league. How reactionary do you think the league will be on this playoff season?
Well, I would say this. First of all, I think we're going through this in all the sports, right? We saw it in football, in the Rams-Saints game. Heck, we saw it in the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah,
I mean, it was the last place you would expect to have a replay situation come into play, but we did. We've seen it in the, you know, just go to any baseball game and watch the balls and strikes on a nightly basis. I mean, that's, I think, something that Major League Baseball is probably looking at. You know, the NBA, they have their challenges, I'm sure. All these sports do, because the world is changing. The technology is different.
Yeah, the NBA, they're going to that replay a lot. You know, you're seeing it quite a bit in all sports. You're absolutely right.
And so I think that the NHL will have a good, you know, after this couple of months of the postseason, where we've had a number of different issues, and we are, like I said, we live in a different world now, and there's the advent of the sports gambling, which gives another dimension to, like, trying to have the, always you want the appearance of no impropriety, right? So that's another thing that plays into this. But I think the you know, the general managers and the competition committee and the commissioner and the NHLPA, they're going to all have to sit down in their various groups and really think long and hard about where they want to go with this. And there's a number of things they could do, and you know, we've talked about some of them on this podcast, and I've talked about a couple of them over on our show on NHL Now. And you know, I think we're gonna see some changes. It's just a matter of which way we go. And but there is a limit, because nothing is perfect. And as I mentioned to you before, we were talking about that goal that O'Reilly scored last night. That was a great shot. That was a great picture. It was easy to see. But there's going to be other times when you go to replay and you're not quite sure. So it's not always going to be that easy. It's never going to be perfect. But I think the league and all the principals are going to have to get together this summer and really take a good hard look at exactly where they want to go with this.
Yeah, we're going to have to pay close attention, because I do think something is going to happen, because I do think the reaction has been crazy. And I do think that there are things that can be tweaked and changed. I'm just hesitant to see, well, there needs to be more replay. Well, where does it stop? And if you think all the controversy is going to be taken out of every sport by adding replay, it's ridiculous. You just can't do it, because those fans will complain, well, I went out to the Rock last night to watch Devils Hurricanes, and I got home at 1 o'clock in the morning because 50 things were replayed. There is a flow to a game. Dave Maloney brings this up a lot. One of the things he hates about the offside call is that you have a goal, there's energy in the building, there's electricity in the building, and then, oh, we're going to replay it. And then it saps the building of its energy. The game's flow is disrupted. And even if they get the call right, at what cost? Because one of the great things about hockey is there's a flow, there's a tempo, that when that is disrupted, it really kind of sometimes changes the fun that you have watching and being at the game. I mean, you have to be sensitive to that too.
Yeah, I think, again, there's a lot of things to consider. I think most people would say, let's try to get as many things right as we can. I think simple things like puck over glass plays that are the referees don't see, very easy to review, in my view. Most of the time, almost 99% of the time, easy to review. Pucks in the netting, when puck goes in the netting and comes back on the ice, it's out of play. Those are things I think you should be able to review. A simple hand pass play that, if it leads to the goal, I think we've talked about the idea of reviewing all scoring plays like they do in other sports. Most of them are going to be inconsequential. There'll be some that it's nice for the officials to have an avenue to go down. Like the play on the hand pass, if we could have just reviewed that scoring play, it would have been easy for the referees to say, yep, there was a hand pass there, face off, you know, at center ice or, you know, in the neutral zone. And we would move on with the game. But in that particular situation, because we have there's no way to address it. So the referees, I'm sure, knew they missed it, and I'm sure they would have loved to do something about it, but there was no way to address it. So, again, I go back to the idea that, you know, the league, the Players Association, the competition committee, all the principals are going to have to get together and really, they're going to have to think long and hard and think about the potential consequences as best they can, because when you go back to the offside challenge, it was done with the best intention to stop the egregious, you know, to kind of have an ability to address an egregious offside play that happens once in a blue moon. I mean, an egregious offside doesn't happen that often. And in turn, as it turned out, the ripples from throwing that little rock in the water have had a great have spread a great distance over time. Mm. So, you know, they're going to have to try to think about all the potential consequences as we move forward. But some of the easy ones, again, puck over glass, those type of things, let's have a review on those and make it easy. Because I go back to Game 7, Don, in the first round, Washington and Carolina, the Washington Capitals flipped one over the glass. It was pretty clear it was a puck over glass penalty. The referees missed it. A little later, the situation was reversed. Carolina threw it up over the glass. The referees called the penalty, and I was sitting there in that building kind of dreading a power play goal in overtime to win it on that particular play because it was obvious that one had been missed. In that case, it worked out where they were able to kill the penalty and the game was not, the result was not marred by a missed call. So it is something that they're going to have to look at long and hard. And it's been a tough couple of months. There's been some tough situations, more than I can remember, Don. I don't know how you feel about it, but it seems like more than I remember in recent years in a two-month playoff window.
It's incredible, really, when you think about it. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that we're watching in HD. There's a lot more angles. Every game is on television now. You know, we didn't have that benefit when we were growing up, you know, where a lot of games weren't available to us, you know. You read about it, but you didn't know how bad it really was. A couple of nerdy stats for you, but I think it's kind of interesting. With Kuhlman scoring last night, 20 different goal scorers for the Boston Bruins. Matter of fact, they've had 21 skaters play in the postseason, and all but John Morris scored a goal. That's the first time that's happened since the Flyers in 87 had 20 different goal scorers. They ended up losing to Edmonton, but they went to Game 7 in 87, so they've really been able to spread the wealth around. This will be the first Game 7 of a Stanley Cup Final in Boston ever. That kind of blows me away, right? I mean, this is not a team that came into existence last year. I mean, they've been in existence since the mid-20s and have had their share of success since the Stanley Cup Final has gone to a best of seven. I guess it was 1939 that there's never been a Game 7. It's the first Game 7 of a championship series to be played in Boston since the Lakers and Celtics in 1984.
Wow.
So
that's a nice little bit of history right there. And, you know, Boston, the Bruins had a Game 7 in Vancouver in the finals in 2011, and they went on the road and were able to win it. You know, the Bruins for many, many years, I guess, when you just said from 39 they started the best of seven, right?
Yeah.
The Bruins were kind of a doormat. You know, when you get into the 40s, 50s, 60s, and into the Bobby Orr era, and then they became a force. For several years, they won the two cups. Then they kind of were good, but never good enough to win again until 2011. So I guess I can understand it a little bit, but that's a long stretch not to have a Game 7 in like that, a final. They've had a number of Game 7s over the years in that building. They had one earlier in this playoffs against Toronto. So it'll be a fun night. It'll be a real interesting night there in Boston.
We talked a little bit earlier in the podcast, I guess when the series first started, the difference in cities, right? You had a great analogy about there, you know, the CVS is being a little bit more available to you because of the different cities. But how about just from the hockey standpoint of it? Has there been a big difference between just the fan bases and the reaction to these games between Boston and St. Louis?
Yeah, I mean, two passionate fan bases, first of all, two great sports towns. I felt really, you know, listen, we go to the games. You know, I'm covering the games. I try to give everybody my, you know, my honest opinion about things. Sometimes you agree with me, sometimes you don't. That's fine. But I did feel a little sadness for the fans in St. Louis yesterday because think about the Blues. They come into the league in 67. They're in that Western Conference. They had that success early, but they were the best of the expansion teams, and then they were fed to the Lions in the final, and they would lose three straight Stanley Cup finals in its franchise infancy. But like, you know, the fans, they built up a base there. And they've had really good teams over the years, if you think about it, but there was somebody in the way all the time for them. I mean, it was the Colorado Avalanche or the Dallas Stars or the Detroit Red Wings or the Chicago Blackhawks. There's just somebody was in their way. And, you know, finally they get to the Stanley Cup final this year and they have a game six with a chance to win the Stanley Cup. Think about the, you know, it's just like the Capitals last year, the decades of fans that have grown up and parents and fathers and sons and mothers and daughters. And, you know, there was such a buildup to that last night. And, you know, it was a hard-fought game through the two periods. And in the third, just a kind of a freak bounce helped the Bruins, and then it kind of got away from the Blues after that. So there was just so much excitement in that city yesterday. And, you know, it's sad for those fans. But as I was traveling today, I talked to a few Blues fans, and I said, listen, you'll be just as happy if you're able to win the Cup on Wednesday as you would have last night. So they have to figure it out. But it's been, you know, it's been really two unique cities, two great sports cities, and different. Like I said, Boston is, you know, it's a really urban area. St. Louis is, you know, the downtown is a little spread out there. You really want to get into the suburbs in that area to see kind of where things are happening more. But, you know, it's been a fun series, and I don't know I have no idea who's going to win on Wednesday night.
Well, you know, it's been a crazy series just when you think you got to figure it out, right? And Boston's kind of been that way too, where they've had some trouble handling Prosperity at times as well. I just want a phenomenal game seven. Again, I don't have any rooting interest. Maybe there's a part of me because St. Louis has never won before, and Boston's had quite the success with all of their franchises there recently. But just give me a classic game seven. I think it would be phenomenal for the sport. Let's get it going there for Wednesday. I think it's going to be fun.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, that'd be good.
I'm with you. I mean, that's the thing I'm rooting for in all this. It's just a good, clean, hard, exciting game.
Yeah,
maybe in overtime. But that would be awesome. We haven't had one of those. Yeah. A game seven overtime in the Stanley Cup final. I'd have to really start thinking about that.
Well, not in my time. We've seen cups won in overtime. In game sixes, Devils over the Dallas Stars. I remember that. But for a game seven,
Flyers. The Blackhawks over the Flyers.
On a similar goal to last night's O'Reilly goal. nobody saw it, but Patrick Kane. He's the only person in the building that knew that he scored a goal.
The only guy who knew was in.
Also, before we get to the tweets, you know, there is something, and the Raptors fans are going to probably go through it tonight too. You know, is that it's tough. You know, I'm sure it's happening in Toronto where all the fans are just expecting a championship to be won. You know, I saw it with the Rangers firsthand in Game 5 back in 1994. It's a party atmosphere. We're winning this series. Next thing you know, you lose Game 5, you lose Game 6, and now you got to play, you know, one goal game in Game 7. And when you don't have a lot of experience and the city's a buzz and the stupid St. Louis Dispatch sending out the congratulations before, the game and all that, you know, I'm not jinxes. It's just, it's a lot, right? I'm sure players are being inundated with ticket requests and parties, and they have to plan this stuff. Like, they got to plan the parade and everything. So you're kind of messing with the psyche of a team that's been just so focused for so long, and the Blues are a little experienced at it.
I'll add something to this too about like planning things. Is if the once the when the Bruins got up 2-1, and it looked like things were going to go their way, they were thinking they were thinking about what day, you know. I had heard, not from the Bruins people, but from people like around Boston, people who knew the workings of the city. They were figuring out what day their parade was going to be.
Yeah.
And then they lost the next two games. So, like, listen, this has been a really tight series. I said at the start, it's kind of a coin flip to me. I gave Boston a slight advantages and most of the really, you know, a little bit better in the middle, maybe a little bit better on defense. I mean, but it's just a hair. And like, as I've watched the series play out, I mean, it might just be dead even when you think about it. I mean, O'Reilly's been so good. Shen, O'Reilly, Bozak, and Sundqvist down the middle. I mean, they match up really well with the Bruins guys. So So it, and you think about this too. St. Louis has had guys suspended in two of these games, and guys who are important to their team. They're fourth liners technically, but they're important players, mm-hmm. Sundquist and Barbashev. And don't undersell the fact that Barbashev comes back into the lineup in Game 7, because now I think both those guys deserve those suspensions. And one of the cases, Matt Grizzlick has missed a bunch of games, may not even play Game 7. So, he might have finished his season. But, the Blues have been without those players in a couple of games, and, they've been hurt by their absence. So, it's going to be an interesting night with two teams that are just so close.
Well, think about it. I mean, that fourth line for St. Louis has been so good for them, right? And they've lost a couple of guys. They've had to play games because of suspension. Sundquist getting suspension. Yep. Barbashev. Now, Samford has actually become this godsend that maybe they didn't even realize they had. So maybe they benefited from that. But, hey, it's coming down to the wire. It's going to be last game of the season, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and I know you're going to be all over it. Let's get a couple of tweets in before we say goodbye to you. You were talking about suspensions. Jake wants to know, do you think there's a suspension coming for Shen's boarding last night in the first period?
No, I don't. But I didn't like it. And, I'm just glad that these things are called on the ice, first of all. But I didn't like it. I thought, at the end of the day, it was a dumb penalty for Braden Shen. The team got off to a good start in the game. They had a power play, couldn't score. And, I mean, you don't want to give the Bruins an opportunity. There was just no reason for that hit there. That was just over excitement, too much adrenaline. Went and delivered that blow. It was very clearly a penalty. Then they got a bad break because next thing you know, they throw a puck over glass, and now it's a 5-on-3. And, I mean, that was a key part of the game because the Bruins were able to convert and get on the board first and kind of take the crowd out of it a little bit and get to their really good defending. And this series, the team that, especially lately, the teams that have scored first, it's been beneficial. They've been able to kind of get to their game a little bit and defend and so that was a terrible penalty to take in the game. And one other thing off that, and it happened in Game 3 and it happened in Game 6. Especially a team like St. Louis, they're a four-line team. They like to grind. They like to get their possession game going. They like to get behind your defenseman and work you physically. When they get a power play early in the game, if they don't score, it really evens things up and takes the emotional edge of being at home away.
Absolutely.
And I just think, it's weird to say this, but I think Craig Berube would rather have his team, if they're going to have a power play, have it like in the second or third period. Don't have it in the first 10 minutes. He wants to get to his four-line rotation. I think he's very comfortable with 5-on-5 play. They've been very good 5-on-5. They got a power play in the first 3 minutes, 3 or 4 minutes of the game. Couldn't do anything with it. The emotional tenor of the building changes. And so I had a good talk with Patrick Sharp about that last night on the way out of the building, working for NBC now. And he was, he goes, hey, I love power plays. But he goes, I know, because he was a great power play guy. He goes, but I understand exactly what you're saying. It can really, early in the game, he goes, I didn't like to get one early in the game, especially in a big game, because it changes the dynamic.
Now, maybe that's different if the Blues were, clicking at 30% on the power play.
Yeah.
Maybe, but when you already know that it's a problem. How many times we've seen that cover in this sport where like almost the fans groan, the announcers say, can we decline the penalty? Because you just know that not scoring on the power play, especially at home, not only takes the crowd out of it, sometimes they start to boo you, they get upset. It's so true that you say, because there's just that lack of success in the first place. Chris wants to know, regardless of what happens on Wednesday, which team do you think is in better shape to be a contender long term?
Long term. Well, I mean, let's look at the Bruins first. I mean, their key players are older guys, right? I mean, like Patrice Bergeron is a 2003 draft year, right? So he's in his mid-30s. Chara's in his 40s. Krejci's in his 30s. Marchand has got to be close to that, if not into his 30s by now. Their key guys are getting older. And so, they've got some good young players there. I mean, I think Tuukka Rask is going to be around for a little while longer for sure. I think that Charlie McAvoy is a great young player on the upswing. They've got some other really good players. But, think about a Bruins team with Bergeron fading, Krejci fading, Marchand fading, Chara retiring. That's pretty significant.
Yeah.
Now, on the other side for the Blues, you know, I think a lot depends on Jordan Binnington's future, right? I mean, he's come in and been great. Is Jordan Binnington going to be the guy for the long haul? Or is he going to be a Jim Carrey that we remember from, like, his time in the NHL in the 90s? Or one of those goalies who, you know, he comes in and plays great for her but can't sustain it.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, we just don't know.
Huge.
We won't know until we see that again next year. So that's a big part of it. But Parayko is on defense. Pietrangelo is still in his prime. Parayko is coming in. I think he's just getting better. You know, so those are two really high-end right-shot defensemen that, you know, that's Vince Dunn is, I think, a really a talented young guy back there, too. So that's a plus for them. You know, O'Reilly, I think, is still really relatively in his prime. Shen, you know, so it might be St. Louis, but the problem is, where are they with the goaltending?
Well, it's true. I mean, that's the answer, because if you're going to tell me that Binnington is just going to be some flash in the pan, then not only are you a team in search for a goaltender, you're a team that is in, I think, the best division in the NHL. I mean, even as presently constituted, you might be having to settle for a wild card next year because of how good that division is, right?
Question.
You know, Nashville's not going anywhere. Winnipeg, I think, is still very good, you know.
Dallas is on the upswing.
Colorado, I mean.
Colorado could end up being a power in this league for years.
I mean, Boston's got to contend with Tampa. You know, we forget about Tampa because they were eliminated so early in this process. But, you know, Tampa's a little long in the tooth, but I think they're still good. But you've got Detroit in rebuild. Ottawa's in rebuild. Florida, I guess, is in rebuild.
Yeah, but they got Quenneville coming in, and they got some good players. Right?
No, they do.
I think all these divisions, Donnie, things change so fast. And I just think the Atlantic Division 2 years ago wasn't very good. It was really top-heavy. This year, still top-heavy, but a little, you know, but there were some good teams there. Like Montreal was way better than we thought they were going to be this year.
I agree.
Who knows what's going to happen in the offseason in terms of guys signing. But, you know, the Ottawa Senators, it's a mess up there right now, for sure. And they got to get that straightened out, the ownership thing. But they've got some good young players there. And if they can get the other part of it straightened out and maybe they change owners down the road, I mean, that could be – they're going to be a team that, you know, they may not make the playoffs, but they're going to be hard to play against with some of the talented kids they have there. Florida's going to be better with Quenneville. I'll be interested to see what they do in the offseason, if they go out and get Bobrovsky. Do they even add Panarin? You know, do they make some other changes there? The Bruins are still going to be good. Tampa's really going to be good again. I mean, this was a great team during the regular season. They've got to figure a few things out. Toronto, we got to wait and see what happens there with some of their high-end players. So look around the league now. You know, you go out and cover these. You're calling these games all over North America now. There's no free passes, it seems like, in this league. And, you know, Detroit's is continuing to get better. With Stevie Y there now, you know, that might become more of a destination. So, you know, there's like I say, there's no free passes in this league. It's tight.
No, it's going to be fun. And you know, we'll see long term. You mentioned there's a lot. Listen, there's what, four, five players counting Rask that were on this team in 2009. You know, so that's 10 years ago. And, you know, so you're starting to see Krejci got his first point of the final last night. He's getting older. So there's a lot of older players. But as you said, McAvoy, Carlo, Pasternak's pretty young. So, hey.
Yeah.
But you know what?
Player.
Remember, it was a long time. Like, you were guaranteed to make the playoffs after winning a cup. Now we've seen a few teams win cups and not make the playoffs the next year. Tomorrow's promised to nobody in this league, really. I mean, it's such a competitive league.
It really isn't.
I mean, there's a possibility that the team that wins the Stanley Cup was in dead last in the league on January 3rd. So even
that's
in
right.
the season,
exactly.
you never
yeah,
know.
Exactly.
So
that's a great point.
Yeah, so that's why we gotta pay close attention and work always. Even the teams that win can't rest on their laurels. They've got to continue to get better and continue to change with the times. Well, EJ, enjoy Boston. Should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the Game 7, and we'll catch up at some point afterwards, and we'll figure it all out. Then we have the draft, we have free agency, we're going to have trades.
Oh, this is not ending with the Cup. Absolutely not.
It's going to be really an interesting several weeks now. I mean, we're here, and it's June 10th, I believe it is today, and, you know, we're going to fast forward, like, not even a month. Check in on July 5th, and the world will be tremendously different in the NHL because we will have had a cup winner, we will have had a draft, we will have had trades, we will have, I mean, it's going to be so much different a month from now. We'll know, we'll have such a different perspective on things. It's amazing how things can change very quickly in sports these days.
No, I'm looking forward to it. All right, we'll catch up with you at some point, and we'll see when we can work out next time. If not, then we'll talk to you next Monday to kind of recap the whole thing for sure.
Yeah,
but
that'd be great.
Enjoy it, man. I'll talk to you.
All right, buddy. Anytime.
All right. That's the great EJ Raddick. Of course, he is from Boston, in Boston, and he'll be there for Game 7. We'll catch up with him sometime either, you know, Thursday or Friday after the champion is crowned, and maybe just talk to him again on Monday. We got the draft. We got free agency. So we still got a lot to do even after the Cup is won. So here's the landscape for how we're going to handle things going forward here. No podcast tomorrow. We'll give you an extensive preview of Game 7 on Wednesday. And, of course, we'll also be back on Thursday for the champion being crowned, and then we'll lay the land for how we're going to deal with the draft and how we're going to deal with free agency and everything that we're expecting during the course of the offseason. We won't do it every day during the offseason, but we'll definitely be around to update you on all the happenings around the National Hockey League. So we'll be back with you again on Wednesday for Game 7. Thanks so much for listening today. This was the Monday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct Podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York and worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct Podcast on the ESPN app, Google Play Music, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.